Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Hope Chapman's here.
Hi.
You can find her on JesuOtaku.com, ThatGuyWithTheGlasses.com, and Anime News Network, of course.
Everywhere.
Your most recent contribution being the review of Dokes 3.
Dokes Trace, yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's exciting. Joining us also for this sort of off-the-cuff kind of year-end thing before we get to the holiday special... A friend of the show, he's a graphic designer. You've seen his work on the video game Skullgirls, or Skullgirls Encore, which I believe is now legally required to be called on, on a couple of different platforms. It's Brady Hartel. Brady, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Zach. You still got my last name wrong, but thanks. Thanks for having me.
What, is it Hartle?
Yeah, it's Hartle.
Hartle.
You want me to do it over again?
I don't know. I don't care. So many people call me Hartle all the time anyway, or Hartel all the time anyway. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Hartel is more dramatic.
Hartel.
Hartel.
Mr. Hartel, how are you doing today?
Kid is Hartel.
Well, so people who listen to this show regularly, we're doing a little bit of an experiment. We are actually doing this live with a chat room. We may do this again. I don't know, but we're going to go ahead and tape a regular episode and... take some questions from the chat at the end of all this. So we'll do the regular show, then we'll take some Twitter questions, and then we'll take some chat questions. So that'll be interesting, and hopefully it'll be okay. But the entire point of this was mostly just to kind of wrap up 2013. We're at the end of it here. And I kind of wanted to start with movies a little bit. Mostly, I just want to bitch about The Hobbit. I really want to bitch about The Hobbit. I hated that movie so much.
A bunch of dwarves and maybe The Hobbit occasionally. Also, too much smog.
What did you just say?
Too much smog.
Too much smog?
Smaug.
It's pronounced...
Smoog.
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 Smaug.
Smarter.
Smaug.
Smurger.
Smoog.
Smiggy.
Yeah. Brady, Smooch. Did you see this film?
No, and... honestly, I went and saw the first one last year, and it seems like something, like, I'm so not interested right now to see it, considering the last one, that I guess I'm just going to wait until it's on video, probably.
Not a bad choice. I would say that is probably a pretty good option.
Like, also I want to say that Smoog sounds like hoity-toity pollution, like, pollution just got way too... up its own ass. It's like, I'm not smog, I'm schmoog.
Yeah, I don't know. We saw this like the day it came out, and man, I had my head in my hands. Mm-hmm. I was so upset.
When it started the first half or so, I was like, I'll take this over the first one. And then in the last half, I was like, I don't know if I'd take this over the first one.
Yeah, so like compared to the slog the first one was. And I mean, I had fun seeing the first one, but it was just like way, way
slog,
too long.
Slog, that's the dragon's name. Slog.
Desolation of Slog.
Desolation of Slog, yeah, that's pretty good.
The one scene with Smaug is the good part of the movie.
Yep.
It's about 15 10 minutes.
It's 10 minutes of good.
And then, what the fuck is this?
It's an oasis of good in the desert of pain.
What the fuck is the rest of this?
Of garbage CG orcs. And, like, you get tired of watching cartoon orcs get axes embedded in their heads. Like, It just, they don't have any weight to them anymore.
The orcs just appear at, like, every relevant story point. It's like, well, the dwarves are here at this point in the story, so orcs have to be here, too.
Yeah, I just, it was this gigantic, bloated CG overkill stuffed to the brim with fan fiction.
Yeah, there's a lot of fan fiction in it.
And most of the fan fiction is only in there so that this particular film can have some kind of closure to something, anything. Mm-hmm. Because there's only maybe six chapters or so worth of material from the book in there.
Maybe
and
less.
Probably less. And they can't go any further than that because...
And to save the Battle of Five Armies for another three-hour bloated film.
Yeah, fucking spoiler alert. They don't kill the dragon in this. They keep teasing that this one guy is going to fire this one fucking arrow that can totally kill this dragon, and they don't get to that.
Mm-hmm.
The movie ends on a total cliffhanger, which is fine, but it's clear that there was so little material for them to stretch out over the three-hour runtime of this movie.
The problem is the cliffhanger where it's like, oh, they didn't kill the dragon, comes after about, like, 40 minutes of... Let's try and kill this dragon and fail in the most, like, roundabout dumb ways. Like, this will kill the dragon. Let's dump water on him. Let's dump gold on him. Let's chase him up and down a well in a comical barrel chase thing. Like, it's all so pointless. And it makes Smaug look really dumb, because he's reduced from sort of an extremely arrogant, like, coagulation of all sinful things... dragon with a personality to a big, roaring, stupid thing that chases after dwarves for 30 minutes without doing anything else.
So it's like that part in a Scooby-Doo episode where they've got, like, that 60s, like, music playing, and they're going through all the doors, and they're chasing everybody around.
A little bit. It is. Like, it's like, quick, hide behind these pillars and make him breathe fire into the forge so we can use this to melt a gold statue, and while we're doing this, you should ride this wheelbarrow down a log flume ride of molten gold that looks like crap because it's this bright yellow CG gold. Holy fuck!
Do they jump into the log flume with the dragon but don't know the dragon's there, and the dragon's, like, all in the background, and it's like, whoa, and then they get out and, like, oh, wait, we're in here with the dragon. Oh, no, let's run.
No, they're dodging. The flume ride of gold is going between the dragon's legs and tail, and it's this big, crazy theme ride thing, and it goes on for eons and accomplishes absolutely nothing.
Yeah, by that time, I was so ready for that fucking movie to be over. The fan fiction stuff really doesn't help it. And also, like, so most of this movie is, it seems like it's about Legolas and his not-girlfriend, and then
his Mary Sue girlfriend?
So Kate from Lost is in it.
Mm-hmm. And she's in a love triangle. I'm so surprised.
And there's a love triangle between her and... a dwarf, one of the dwarves.
I think it's Kiwi?
Who fucking knows?
I don't know.
Who fucking knows?
Who knows? They're all the same.
But Legolas is like a CG pinball that just bounces around the screen killing orcs. It gets to such a cartoonish extent that... There's a moment in this movie where I just started making... I started singing... one of the Music for TV Dinner songs.
Yeah.
There's an orc that, like... So, like, Legolas is on a balcony. An orc jumps onto or falls off of something onto a boat that has another orc on it.
He flies
It smashes the bottom of the boat in, which launches the other orc into the air. Legolas cuts that orc's head off on the balcony...
And it stays on the sword.
And it stays on his sword.
While the body falls.
The body hits the boat again, and then the head is still growling.
Grr, grr, grr.
Does it knock the cat in the trap, and it sets off the mouse trap, and then you capture it? Like, it sounds like a Rube Goldberg machine
it's
of
like
death.
2.5 hours you're into this fucking movie, and you're like, why am I still watching these stupid cartoon orcs get decapitated? I don't care anymore. Like... You've seen enough.
Well, you know, one of my big problems with the first movie, especially if you saw it in that weird 48 frames per second, is like the look of it was so disjointed. It was like sometimes it looked like I was watching a video game cutscene. Sometimes it looked like a really nice documentary about New Zealand. Sometimes it looked like, oh, there's our actors looking like they're on video. Like, it was, the style of it is really disjointed. Like, it looks so weird to watch it because it doesn't all fit together because they're going for I'm not sure what.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk video game cutscene. There's a... So the gold flume ride I mentioned earlier is not the only flume ride in the film. Of course, there's the barrels escaping from the Elf King's Hall, Bilbo Baggins, bravest little hobbit of them all. There's that scene. And in it, like, there's CG dwarves hanging out in CG barrels, bouncing around, like, knocking against each other like pinballs, and there's a scene where Legolas is jumping from dwarf head to dwarf head in the river, and it is almost as unrealistic a CG body double as, like, the original Lord of the Rings films, which are great, but, you know, the CG body double of Legolas is its own character, because you can tell the difference, and it's like that, like, he's leaping from dwarf head, shooting arrows at orcs, and then he, like, lands on two dwarves and is balancing on them while he's shooting orcs, and it goes on for, like, another 5 minutes, and yes. It's just, the whole thing is like a video game.
Yeah, and I just, I don't know how anyone, and the reason that I'm so, like, incensed about these movies is because I fucking love Lord of the Rings. Like, those movies make me so happy. I will watch them when they're on TV. I've seen them countless times. They're so good, and they're so tactile. Like, most of those movies feel, you know, with the exception of, like, the end of Return of the King, they feel like they're real. They feel like you could really go to those places and see those people, and it feels real, like it's really there. It's that combination of practical and CG that made Jurassic Park work so well and endure to this day.
Oh, you know? I mean, I would say that, like, those movies push the CG a little more, but there's definitely enough
practical.
Absolutely,
you're totally right. Yeah,
but there's enough practical in there, especially, like, even with the trees and stuff. There's, like, models and stuff on that, and that, and, like, the second movie with the walking trees. Now that there's models and stuff that they put them against, so it doesn't look completely fake. Like, they just mix just enough that those movies look, you know, look good. I'm not a super huge fan, but I loved seeing them in the theaters. And yeah, like, I didn't feel like, and I mean, the whole opposite end of that spectrum is going to see, like, you know, Episode 3. Where it just looks like everybody's in front of a blue screen, whereas those movies, the Lord of the Rings ones, do not look like that. Like, they just, they're,
but
you can,
do.
You can feel like you're in them.
The Hobbit movies absolutely look like the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah.
In fact, like, there is no clearer comparison than the Star Wars prequels, except that they didn't happen 30 years later. They happened 10 years later, so it's different. But to me, watching these movies, it's not that different.
All the good stuff in them is from the book, translated faithfully, and everything else is just, like, filler that doesn't mean anything. They could have taken, okay, if you're gonna make a big, bloated, long movie, take some time to, like, explore these dwarf characters, do something with that, but no, it's just, let's add in our fanfic characters who also have no personality, this fake drama love triangle that nobody gives a shit about, you know. It's just all filler that doesn't mean anything. It's not entertaining. It's really poorly shot, and there's no interesting dialogue. Like, the dialogue is, like, you can draw a line between, oh, this is from the book. They're talking like people might in Middle Earth, and this is like, vengeance will be mine. I will fight you. Like, generic of generic action fantasy dialogue.
Hey, dog, what up? I'm going to slice you with my sword. It's like, that doesn't sound like Gandalf.
Well, yeah, it's like, this world is ours. We must fight for this world. How can you only be concerned with the elf kingdom? Stuff like that where it's like, this is not... Or Sauron at one point, spoilers, Sauron's in The Hobbit, says, I am darkness incarnate. Light cannot defeat darkness, which is not something Sauron would ever fucking say. What is this? It's just garbage.
So with that said, and you're saying, like, oh, well, you can tell what's good, what's from the book, and what's not. Like, once the inevitable book version cut is made by either the official people or fan edits or whatever, do you think that will be a good movie, or is it just not overall, just, it's not salvageable?
I thought about that probably longer than I should have, and I realized that I don't think you can make a book-only cut out of these movies that would be coherent. I think it would be a bunch of disjointed scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Because the book scenes, it's like you have 300 pages of material stretched out over 9 to 12 hours of film.
That's ridiculous to me.
And
I mean, these are longer than the original... The theatrical cuts of the first three, right?
No, they're not. I think the extended Hobbit's like 2 hours and 20 minutes, or 3 hours and 20 minutes, something like that. It's not that much longer. I cannot imagine them adding a minute to this one, but I'm sure they will. So you're looking at maybe 10 hours total, maybe 10 or 11 hours total. You're talking about a thing that's stretched so thin that in order to just have the stuff that's in the book, you'd have to... It's scanty. It's and they're all attached in and woven into non-book material. So, you know, that's a real tough thing to do. I don't know how anyone would do it, but, you know, I'm not... I don't make fan edits, so...
I think it is possible to make a fan edit that's not just book material. Like, that's not quite right. But, like, only book material and the minimum of connective tissue to make anything that's shoved in there, like the thing about the white orc or whatever, like the minimum of connective tissue that is fan fiction, but kind of plays into the overall arc. Like, I think you could do that and still make, like, a short movie and make it all make sense. Like, it wouldn't be book only, but it would be mostly book only with just cut all the padding out of this crappy stuff and just get us the minimum of information, the minimum of emotional impact, and there we go. You know, it's all you need. I think you could do that.
But anyway, we should probably talk about anime.
Yeah.
That's what the show's about, right?
Yeah.
Anime.
So we're coming to the end of the year, and you've watched a lot more anime than I have. Mm. I sort of wanted your take on what you thought maybe was the best thing this year that you saw.
Well, I think the most memorable is easily like Attack on Titan. As far as, I don't know, like, stuff that sticks in the mind is probably Attack on Titan, followed very shortly by Watamote, and weirdly enough, like, stuff like Free be up there. Just stuff that's kind of unique and has a following and has, like, a little social network that is interesting to look at in its own way. Like, Free definitely has its own weird little following that's interesting. Overall, like, I'd say this was a really good year for anime. Like, I mean... The thing that's not done airing, but I like a lot, is Kill la Kill. I think it's easily, like, the best thing that Imaishi's ever done, honestly. It has, it's kind of like all of his stuff that he really likes with a little more girth to it. It's not just him kind of spin-wheeling, really neat stuff, look at this neat stuff. Like, it has some real guts to it. It's got some smarts. The way it's built is great. Kill la Kill is really great. Attack on Titan. We got Flowers of Evil this year, which was really strange and unique. And it was a good year for anime. Overall, like, even the usually completely negligible winter season had a couple good things in it. So, like, Katara-san and the Unlimited Hyobu Kiyosuke, which is just anime X-Men, but it was fun anime X-Men. So, it was a really good year, I think. I think stuff, anime is kind of looking up. I think it'll be... maybe even better next year. I thought it was a good year, but yeah.
So, I mean, do you have, like you said Attack on Titan was the most memorable thing.
Yeah.
But, like, what do you think was the best thing you saw?
I don't know. Like, there were so many good things that, I can't really pick one. I guess, like, Watamote and Attack on Titan were probably the most solid. Like, you have other stuff that's interesting and really good, like Flowers of Evil, Eccentric Family, Gatchaman Crowds, but it has some weirdness to it. I guess that's makes it a little bit like, oh, maybe this needs to be tidied or whatever. And then there's, like, Free, which is a lot of fun, but it's not anything exceptional, and it's not trying to be. It's just kind of trying to be sort of like a nice kid, like, Disney-ish story, and that's fine. But things that are really stick out as exceptional, I guess, Watamote and Attack on Titan. And Kill la Kill, but it's not done yet, so I can't really make a definitive judgment, but...
That's going to be 26... 24?
Yeah, it's like 26 or something.
Yeah, so next spring we can talk more about that one, but yeah.
But a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I'm supposed to talk about the best thing I've seen this year on the holiday special, so I won't say that here. But I think it was a pretty good year too. Like, I saw plenty of really good stuff this year, and I was pretty happy with the selection of material that, you know, is actually aimed at someone like me. You know, we got plenty of it, which is great. Like, I'll never complain or begrudge a year in which we get this many good shows, and going into the new year, seemingly even more material like that, aimed at people like me and you. And, you know, we don't necessarily go in for the typical sort of otaku stuff, but, you know, we had Flowers of Evil, and we had Watamote, and we had even Attack on Titan, you know, which is the super... that's as mainstream as I think you can reasonably call a new anime right now.
And even of the... I watched a lot of the typical otaku stuff, too. And even of that, there was some nice things, like... I forgot which studio it is that's doing this, because I just can't remember off the top of my head, but there's this studio, I think is a spinoff of another, that's been doing some really nice, like, Azumanga Daioh-style comedy stuff. They did Love Lab this year, and that was fun. Love Lab, Katara-san, there was stuff like that where it's like, for an otaku market, but it is actually funny, and it has nice little dramatic punches to it, and it's good. Like, it's negligible. It's, like, rental stuff, but it's nice and reassuring, and I even liked Orishura up to the last, like, couple episodes where they're like, well, our audience is otaku, so let's make it a harem thing straight up. But for the first half or so, it was nice and subversive, and yeah, even of the typical otaku stuff, there was some nice stuff. So
It was better than last year, anyway. Did that show Coppelion end up being any good or not? Like, the backgrounds for that were absolutely amazing looking, and
I never got to watch much of it, but I heard it bad really hard from absolutely everybody, so I don't know. Like,
What did everybody say? I'm sorry.
I didn't hear anybody defending it. Like, I'm sure there are some people that like it, but even people that are much less picky than... Like, people that watch a whole bunch of stuff and aren't that picky were saying Coppelion shit the bed really hard, so I have no idea.
Oh, that's sad to hear. Because, like, the backgrounds in that were, like, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. It's a shame about those color filters. Those backgrounds do look really nice if they didn't kind of wreck it with color filters. But the other thing I think that was like super exciting this year, speaking of Attack on Titan, that is the first show, and this came up on Twitter, that's the first show I've seen people like live tweeting every single episode.
Mm-hmm.
Giving up, like even Kill la Kill.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see people live tweeting it even now. Like, you know, people are still excited about that show, and that's great. But you don't see people live tweeting it. It's not like a ritual where it's like Saturday, the new episode's out, let's all sit and talk about it and spoil the fuck out of it, by the way, on Twitter.
Yeah, I have not watched a single episode of Attack on Titan, and I probably know what happens.
And you know everything that happens.
Attack on Titan.
Yeah. I'm not saying that no one live tweets Kill la Kill. I'm just saying... Not like Attack on Titan. Attack on Titan was a phenomenon.
You mentioned this like a couple weeks ago, and I thought about it when you started talking about it. I was like, why is that? And I think it's because the more and more... And a lot of people, I guess the people that like to neg Attack on Titan, I guess, do so, which that's fine. If they don't like it, that's totally cool. I get it. But the people that really come down on it, usually come down on it for the story or for the characters. And I'm like, well, I don't think that's fair. And then the more I thought about that stuff, I think what makes Attack on Titan so, like, live tweetable, I guess, is that it's not structured like a normal narrative at all. Like, Kill la Kill's great. It's structured like a pretty normal narrative. It builds about the way you would expect a serial anime to build. Attack on Titan is, like, there'll be a huge change in the status quo, a slight lull, a huge change in the status quo, a slight lull, a huge change, and it's always just... It's just like, it's not a straight line, it's somebody just drawing a shape and then scribbling through it and drawing another one, and it's just, it changes so much, and it completely takes away whatever your preconceptions were, and you can't fall in love with any characters, except maybe the main three, but even then, like, it's just, you know, it's just not structured like a normal narrative. It's very, very unpredictable, so...
The only thing that I saw being tweeted the same amount the same way is Breaking Bad at the same, and it was about the same time they were airing too.
Mm.
And it was like those were the two things that people would always nonstop tweet about, like appointment television almost.
Yeah, and you can't prescribe it to like a broader trend. You have to be like, okay, my Twitter feed is curated by me. I'm only following these certain people. I can't look at it as like a broader trend, but no one cared about any show more than Attack on Titan this year. Like, that was obviously the gigantic breakout thing, and I'm happy for that because I hope it stays that way. We did a show with Funimation last week, and they were talking about how, well, some shows people want to collect, some shows people don't. Some people just want to see it once, and then they don't necessarily want to rewatch it. I kind of hope that people actually buy Attack on Titan and want to collect it, and then that'll spurn, you know, a second season or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I've rewatched episodes of Attack on Titan since it's aired this year. Like, specifically the one, episode 5, I don't have to describe why, I rewatched, I think, twice at one point. And, whatever, I don't know the number, but whatever episode it is where, a fight between two titans resolves itself in a very unexpected and violent way, in the forest, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, that, you know, you have to go back and, like, look at it sometimes. It's just addictive, I guess.
Well, it seems like if they position it right and do it right, it could be like their next Full Metal Alchemist. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like if they do it right, it could be that.
Yeah, uh-huh. I think so. So the other thing I wanted to bring up was Wolf Children, which you reviewed for the site.
Yep.
And I was pretty let down.
Wolf puppies sure are cute.
I was pretty let down by Wolf Children. Got to admit, I'm not the world's biggest Mamoru Hosoda fan. Like, I had my problems with Summer Wars, and I think The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, like, the first two acts of The Girl Who Leapt Through Time are probably his best work. The third act of The Girl Who Leapt Through Time kind of just completely derails and ruins that whole movie, but, well, it doesn't ruin it, but it's not as good. And, Wolf Children, I don't know. I wanted it to be more than it was. I wanted it to say more than it did. I wanted it to... I don't know if it's just unreasonable expectations, but it just felt so slight. It felt so slight.
I wonder if... Like, I don't know. The thing is, I want to see Mamoru Hosoda... People keep mentioning, like, he did a One Piece movie, and I keep wanting him to see something... To do something really different, because the stuff he really likes is, like, kids, the supernatural, technology, like, white voids of weird technology. Like, he likes that stuff. I think his best work is Summer Wars. The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, this is pretty good. It's alright. I think Summer Wars is his strongest work, but I also think it's, like, he's literally done that same story, like, three times now. There was a short film he did for, what was it? Was it, like, Prada or something? Gucci, something like that. There was a short film he did, like, for Prada or some other, like, fashion thing, and it was Digimon Summer Wars. And, of course, and there's Digimon, that's Digimon Summer Wars. And Summer Wars is Digimon Summer Wars. So he's done that over and over. Like, we get that he really likes that. I like it, too. I can't blame him. But I want to see him do something really different, like a horror movie or action or something like that. And not,
I mean, and also, not to take away from Summer Wars, I think that's, like, the best execution of that story he's told, probably.
Yeah, I don't think he can really make it any more solid than that.
It's I roll my eyes at the, oh, but have you heard about this Digimon movie? Like, you can't talk about Summer Wars without some asshole coming up and, Digimon! And you're like, yes, I know.
Just tell him, have you seen that Prada commercial? That's another version.
I want to talk about this movie, not fucking Digimon. so irritating.
Prada commercial.
Wolf Children, I don't know, like...
Well, there was no technology in it. That must have.
Yeah, really.
You mean they're not techno wolf children?
There's computer no computer robot wolves, computer monsters, anything like that.
Because you wrote your review, and it was obviously I agreed largely with the review. The thread, the comments thread that came afterward, there's a lot of people saying, like, well, I really identified with this, and it gave me warm fuzzies. And I was sitting there watching it saying, well, this is just a whitewashed love letter to your perfect mom. Mm-hmm. And that makes me, I don't feel anything at that. Like, you're not even making her human. You're making her into this perfect character that... Moms aren't like that. They're not like that. Like,
and it would have been fine if it was about the children. Like... But it wasn't. Like, if it really was the focus, if it was just, I was born as this weird werewolf thing, and this is how I decided to live my life, or whatever, it was really about her and her brother and the different paths they chose, I think it would have been way stronger. If it was about the mom, then make it about the mom. Like, make her a real person. But it didn't do either of those things. It just sort of waffled in the middle. And it's like...
Well, yeah, so, and it's weird, too, because people kept saying, like, well, he's telling it from the perspective of... the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
But the main character is obviously the mom, but it's not told from her perspective.
Yeah.
So it's this confused kind of choppy, a little bit of a mess, because you wind up with, Mamoru Hosoda was never a little girl, so mm-hmm. he doesn't know what that experience is like. He also doesn't know what it's like to be a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't he tell it from the only perspective that he actually knew
mm-hmm.
in this obviously semi-autobiographical film, from the perspective of the little boy? But in the perspective
there.
Of the little boy is the most distant character in the entire thing, who runs off to be a wolf mm-hmm. in the last third of the film.
That's the note they ended on, too.
Yeah. Which, what the fuck, man?
I think it was... It's a confused endeavor. It's a very earnest, but confused endeavor. And, you know, that's fine. I'm just going to kind of wait for him to really try and do something different, because I think, like, his deepest heart, soul concept... Like, you know, there's always creators have concepts that are, like, really deep in their soul. Like, for Miyazaki, it's kind of something like Porco Rosso. I think that's deep, deep, deep in his heart. And for Hosoda, I think it's Summer Wars. Like, I think that's his, that he really, really likes. So, I mean, once he's done that several times, and now done spins of different aspects of his life, Wolf Children's about his mom, etc., like, do something really different, and then you'll get my attention again. But, you know, it's cute, it's sweet, it's nice, but it's really forgettable, and...
I mean, it doesn't matter what he does. Like, we are, in this profession, we are doomed to get excited about anything he makes.
Right.
Like, he'll have another film out in a couple of years, I'm sure, and we'll have to be like, oh, it's the new Mamoru Hosoda. And I will once again have to be like, you know, I'm not that big a fan of his. Wolf Children was kind of lame, and wasn't that big on Summer Wars. Like, once again, I'll have to defend my stance as like, well, I'm tired of the fact that, you know, all the new great anime directors, the ones that aren't dead, are just copying, seem like they're just copying Ghibli.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that. I don't want that so badly.
Right.
Like, yeah. Anyway.
I for one, cannot wait for Cat Children and Fox Children to come out.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, giant
see, this
dog.
You know, this the whole discussion shows just how far behind I am on like anime. I'm like the most recent thing I've watched is Tiger and Bunny, and then I'm halfway through the woman called Fujiko Mine. Like, I'm halfway through that. I'm really enjoying that though.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm like so far behind. Like, I've not watched any of this stuff.
Watch out for the end of that show. It's a doozy. I didn't mean that in a good way, but it's a doozy.
Do you mean
Fujiko?
Yeah.
No, like, Tiger and Bunny halfway, like, is really good for the first half, and then the second half, it's like, we don't have a budget.
Yeah, the animation quality drops off pretty hard in that one.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, like, Tiger and Bunny, I'd be like, just watch first half, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that that movie, and I mean, because I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun. The first movie, even though half of it is like a retelling of the first few episodes, the other half of it's like a new thing, and it's more like the first half of that series, where it's just sort of fun adventure stuff, so I enjoyed that, the movie, but yeah, I'm sort of hoping the second movie's as fun as the first one, and as fun as the first half of it. Though I have a sort of feeling that they're going to try and do, like, here's the more dark and twisted superhero stuff.
Well, you'll see it eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tiger and Bunny, those first 12 are pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're fun. I think they're a lot. They're fun, and they capture, honestly, I think, what a lot of American superhero stuff is missing right now. It feels like really sort of like Silver Age fun and hijinks like that, with mm-hmm. sort of like a little bit of like Japanese sensibility twisted in, like the way they do it. But
there's a little drama. It's a little scary at points, but it's fun. It's not... It doesn't that super serious. It's, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, and then like in that second half where like, oh, Mr. Legend has this really like
a
god awful backstory, and like why did we need this? I don't know. I
surprise, this guy was a wife abuser.
Yeah, well he was worse. Like he was awful. Like and then the other thing is too, the animation budget like drops, so it's like here's six episodes of Kotetsu and Barnaby just talking back and forth.
Yeah, like I said, just the first half, and then for the second half, just like read the cliff notes to find out what villain they oust. And it's not the fucking main villain. It's not the one that, you know, was foreshadowed and teased and was really entertaining the first half.
Yeah.
It's something else.
We've had a copy of the Tiger Money movie sitting here for months. Have not touched it.
The movie is complete, like, sort of jump fluff, but it's like those first episodes where it's like it's just like a villain of the week and they have a bunch of fun and it's Tiger and Bunny getting to know each other again. It's a lot more fun than that second half of that series, to me anyway. I enjoyed watching it. Again, though, like, that's if you want to, like, you can fast forward past, like, I would say the first 40 minutes of it. Like, they add like one or two new scenes to the beginning, but it's not really worth rewatching the first part, but the second part's pretty fun, and it's like another episode of that first 13, really, is what it is, with a bigger budget.
All right. So Tiger and Bunny, Woman Called Fujiko Mine.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through that. But I've enjoyed it, and as, like, I like the, you know, I've been enjoying what little, like the capers. They obviously put a little thought into the capers in this one, more so than a lot of Lupin plots for the TV show. And, like, I don't know, as an art guy, I just keep staring at how they do the shading and everything on it, and I'm like, how do they sit down and do this? I mean, like, I think that show is a really great example of, we don't have a huge budget, like, to shade all this, cell shading. So let's do another style that will, you know, make it look interesting while also helping our budget, you know, stay on budget. And you know, it's one of those things where they worked with what they had to make it look better, and the whole the product looks better for it, instead of trying to half-ass it, more like the end of Tiger and Bunny, where it's obviously didn't have a budget.
Yeah. I'm curious to see the new movie, the second one, because apparently that's new story. Like, that's not just rehashing the first two episodes or whatever.
No, that's supposed to be, like, the continuation of the Ouroboros plot, I think. They released, like, a trailer for it, and it's like he's like 2 second Kotetsu or something. Like, that's what the trailer was. It's like a really short 30 seconds of animation.
I just want, like, Lunatic to actually be the villain instead of waiting for him to be the villain. You wait forever for Lunatic to really be the villain, and they're like, we're holding on to him for later. But I'm like, use your assets now. Come up with another asset.
I don't know. I don't know if they'll make him into the complete villain though. I don't know. From the trailer to I can't remember, like, it has a really weird title too, but for the trailer for the second one, it looks like they're trying to do more of the dark stuff, which I'm sort of apprehensive about, but from the little snippets of animation they released, I'm a little hopeful that it's going to be at least fun and a little funny. So there. That is me way far behind on anime.
All right. Okay. Brady, you want to give us your take on Sonic Lost World?
Why? Why do you ask me this? I got so frustrated with that game.
You and everyone else. Okay. All right, let's go ahead and take some Twitter questions here. Jay Betteridge asks, Steven Universe is heavily influenced by anime-style background music. Is it?
I don't think so.
Do you think other shows should follow this approach to music? I disagree with your premise, and therefore,
Rebecca Sugar, who is in charge of that show and the music and a lot of the music for Adventure Time, is a huge anime fan. So there is that. But I think more of the anime influenced Steven Universe is just contextual. It's not so much the music. I think the music is just MIDI. More, you know, it's like, It's MIDI influenced, I guess.
Well, with the premise of the show, it seems like, well, it's going to sort of ape a little, like, anime style music anyway. Though that's another show that has amazing looking backgrounds. Holy crap!
Yeah, really great show. I like it a lot.
Show's really good. I was very amused the other day on the forums. We had someone suggest that the only reason that show has a male lead is because executives demanded that it have a male lead because only male Only little boys buy shit, even though there is no Steven Universe merchandise at all.
Mm. Yeah, anyway.
And what? Like, what the fuck? That's the entire premise of the show.
Pretty sure the premise
is that Sailor Moon is dead, and she left behind a goofy kid and a loser dad. That's the entire fucking show. God.
Just give him some together breakfast, and I'm sure he'll be less snarky.
Yeah. Let's see here. Mad Scientist asks, what anime podcasts would the two of you recommend?
Can't count because there's three of us.
Well, now, see, Brady, you're an unannounced guest.
Oh, I'm special guest, eh?
So, special surprise guest. I will be completely upfront. I don't listen to anime podcasts at all, other than occasionally, whenever Anime World Order puts something out, sometimes I'll check it out. But I make one of these. And when you make one of these, you don't spend a whole lot of time listening to other people making the same thing you are. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them. And I know that Otaku in Review, those guys are friends of the show. So I listen to their thing. Anime World Order, like I said, listen to their thing. Fast Karate, I don't know when the last time they talked about anime was. But listen to that for sure. Those guys, I hire one half of them, and they're on our show a couple times a year. The One Piece podcast, those guys are good. Like, I'm going to be completely upfront here. I don't listen to their shows. I don't think they listen to mine either. When you make one of these things, you tend to, in your downtime when you're in the car, you listen to podcasts, and I listen to, Doug Loves Movies, Giant Bombcast, The F Plus, that stuff, that kind of thing. There's plenty of really good ones out there that I don't actually sit down and listen to them all the time. That's not, like, a condemnation. That's not me saying, oh, those shows are garbage, I'm just saying.
Ancast only forever!
Yeah.
This is an Ancastocracy, get out.
Yeah.
There is this really good one called Ancast that I listen to sometimes.
Very good, you may stay.
It has a very snazzy logo, it's a very classy logo, and that is, whenever any podcast has a really nice logo, that means it's a good podcast.
Oh, well, there you go. Also from Mad Scientist, did you even finish Cinders? Cinders. This is a question relevant to Hope, because Hope does a live stream, for listeners who don't know what we're talking about. Hope does a live stream on Saturdays, and she occasionally runs visual novels, and she was running one that I know you were a big fan of,
yes.
Called Cinders. And there was an interview with the guy who made it, or the lead developer, something like that. And I was playing it with her and making the choices and everything. And
you were a mean Cinderella.
I was apparently a mean Cinderella. I was an asshole.
According to the show.
But I actually really did enjoy the act of playing it. I haven't finished it. I don't have a copy of it myself, or at least I don't have one on my computer. I did want to finish it. Eventually, maybe we will do that. But it did seem like a pretty fun game,
yeah.
And it well made too, and nice artwork.
Yeah, very pretty.
Artwork. It didn't just try to ape anime style stuff,
seriously.
Which was cool.
The thing with this is the neat thing about looking through visual novels is that they are this like indie game dev is neat, and I think it's really cool the people that like give props to great indie games and stuff like that. And I like looking at indie games, but to me, like, video games have always been about experiencing, like, being made to think and explore oneself and feel things. And stuff that makes me feel that way, I enjoy, like Shadow of the Colossus, experiential-type games. And there's only so many of those, so, I mean, visual novels are a fun place to go to see what other people's stories, I guess, that they think are experiential would be like. Like, what are they, if when somebody writes a visual novel, it's like, what choices do they think a person will make that will lead them to this? And that's really interesting to me. So interactive storytelling is really cool to me. Because visual novels are such a pulpy format, often they're quite bad. So it's enjoyable to go through the bad ones. But when you find a good one, I really, really want to praise it and promote it because it's a fledgling format and, you know, it's nice. So I promoted the hell out of Cinders. I really enjoyed it, but... You know, visual novels, good or bad, are fun to go through sometimes.
The other thing about that game, too, is if you look at it and compare it to just any other visual novel, even Japanese visual novels, like you can tell like how much more effort went into the backgrounds and making it animate and like just all these little bells and whistles and things that they added to the style of that game to make it different or look more more bang for your buck than, you know, you're paying very little for it, and there's just so much more effort put into that than a lot of other visual novels.
And the thing that matters the most to me is there's a lot of choices, and the endings are all very different, and it changes depending on what you choose, etc. Like, it's not just somebody's linear story that they occasionally put choices into to make it technically a visual novel game. Like, this really changes radically. Like, Cinderella starts out with no personality, and she develops one based on what you do, so... And they give you so many things to do. It's like every 5 minutes or so, there's something you have to answer for. And anyway, it's like, yay, put lots... If you make a visual novel game, put a bunch of choices in there. Like, make it interactive. Put lots of choices in there. So, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed really good to me. And, you know, I don't play any of that shit. Except for Namco High.
Oh, dear.
I don't play that either.
Yeah, you'd rather play things like Euro Truck Simulator, which is a far...
You're absolutely
more
right.
productive use of your time.
Yeah. Euro Truck... Beep, beep, beep.
Yeah. Euro Truck Simulator is mostly jackknifing on a highway and then the backup sound as I try and get out of the jackknife situation. Anyway, Mad Sinus also asks... Now that 2013 is basically over, what do you guys feel are the best and worst movies released this year? So I feel like this year it's a little late. It's one of those years where I feel like the best movies I'm gonna see this year I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, they're all coming
because
out
they come out at the very butt end of the year. So like the two movies I'm looking forward to absolutely like the most: Wolf of Wall Street and Her, the new Spike Jonze movie. Which is supposed to be fucking incredible. And those are the two that I feel like I'm really excited to see them. I can't wait to see them. And I feel like those are going to be like up near my top, you know, up towards the top of my top five when I do finally see them. But they're not really playing yet.
Yeah.
Wolf of Wall Street doesn't open until Christmas. And Her, I don't think, opens wide until next weekend. So... it'll be a little bit.
American Hustle.
American Hustle, I don't think it's David O. Russell
it's at least
is...
It's something interesting.
I'm interested in seeing it, and I will see it, but it is... David O. Russell has gone fully into I want Oscars mode.
Right.
And, okay, well, he can totally make those movies, but everyone's saying, why did you try and make a Martin Scorsese film... in a year when we already have a Martin Scorsese movie coming out.
Well, and then there's New Coen Brothers.
New Coen Brothers, yeah, I'm excited about that.
So although, all the good stuff is in the ass end of the
year. Yeah. Very ass end of the year. I think we'll see the New Coen Brothers on Friday, I think, when this podcast comes out. So we don't have a opinion on that one yet. But, it's just everything's way packed into the end of the year.
Stuff that I did see this year that's the best, like, first three things popped into my head immediately: Pacific Rim, Gravity, and Frozen are the best years, or the best movies of those.
Yeah, which is all super, super populist, like...
But it was all really good.
It was good. I put Frozen in there. Gravity...
I really liked it, I know.
You liked it more than I did. I didn't dislike it at all. I just keep flashing back to sitting in that theater, like, having a panic attack.
Right. Well, we saw it in the IMAX, like, in the fucking IMAX. Yeah. The real fucking IMAX.
Yeah, we saw it in the crazy IMAX, and I was just like, ah! I did really like it. I did really like Gravity. It was a very good film. I cannot deny it was a great movie. just the experience of watching it wasn't all that pleasant for me. That's all. That's all.
My favorite movie this year was R.I.P.D. No. I really enjoyed Pacific Rim. I enjoyed that a lot. It was a lot of fun. I think my favorite movie this year, and this was one of the first movies I saw this year, was Django Unchained, which I think it technically opened like the ass end of last year, but whatever.
It didn't technically open. It opened wide on Christmas last year.
Yeah. Well, gosh, even sick. Still, I saw that.
Just
this
saying.
Year. Just say I know. Well, even still, that's the movie I saw it this year, and that was probably my favorite, most fun movie to see in theaters. Like, I don't know. It's getting to the point where if I'm gonna go to the theater and spend all that money, I want to see a spectacle. And there's a point where if it's a quiet or more thoughtful movie or that kind of thing, I want to see it like at home in my home theater. I don't know if that's if anybody else thinks like that, but I mean, I kind of want to see a spectacle if I'm going out to the theater. And unfortunately, I haven't seen Frozen yet, which I've heard is really good. So
yeah, I'm just it's weird for me to say it, but it's like right now in a top five, Frozen would easily be like a number five or even a number four.
It's my favorite. Like, it's of the three I mentioned, like, it's my favorite movie I saw this year. In fact, I want to go see it again.
Yeah, it's so good. We should go see it again.
Yay. I enjoyed it so much, and I kind of wondered, like, so I really, like, I'm a little bit of a fogey when it comes to, like, oh, I like 2D animation more than 3D, like, especially with Disney. It's like, I don't know, like, I saw Tangled, and I was like, this is beautiful, this is a real technical achievement, and it, like, the emotion is there, everything's solid, but I just don't know if 3D is the same as 2D, if I can really enjoy a 3D movie as much as I do the classic, the Golden Age or Second Golden Age Disney stuff. And Frozen is like, okay, that's like in my top five favorite Disney movies ever, actually, frankly. So it's like, I guess so. Okay, good. So make more stuff like this. Like, I feel like, okay, Tangled is maybe the Little Mermaid to Frozen's Beauty and the Beast, kind of. And I'm like, okay, yes, Disney, make more things like this. Even if it's in 3D, I will like it if you make it like this. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the other half of the question was disappointing. What was disappointing?
Oh,
well, see, worst, it's just an easier list to populate because we saw so many bad movies.
Oh, one more good thing was Iron Man 3. It was actually better than I thought it would be, considering.
Yeah, it was fine.
I like Iron Man 3.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, it was like genuinely funny and entertaining, so I'm like, yay, it's not just a big slog.
Well, I mean that movie is a lot like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I mean, of course, same director, but yeah. I liked Iron Man 3 a lot. It's more Tony Stark than Iron Man, but it's still a fun movie. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, bad movies, it's a little easier because they're worth. Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still holding on to. I'm still holding on to Man of Steel, worst movie I saw this year. Number two, Lone Ranger, which just saw that one last night.
Fuck.
And.
Fuck.
Yeah. Number three, Star Trek Into Darkness. Number four, The Hobbit.
See, all this stuff is super populous too, so we're playing even.
But see, here's that's the easy. Like, what? How about instead, like, what were you looking forward to seeing and were disappointed on? Like, I've...
Star Trek?
I was really looking forward to Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. I think
I really wanted that to be good.
For a lot of people, it's The World's End. Where they were looking
really
way forward to that.
That was a huge disappointment too, but I didn't walk into it expecting it to be amazing, so I...
See, I was disappointed by The World's End, because I like Hot Fuzz so much. Sure, that it's okay. I really, really like Hot Fuzz. I really like Scott Pilgrim too. So, I was disappointed, but I mean, it wasn't bad. Like, if I think bad movies I saw this year, I'll put... This is the end on there. I won't put this is the
world's
end.
Fucking yeah.
Garbage.
No, I wasn't saying was okay. Bad movies, just things you saw you're kind of disappointed with when you saw it. Like, they didn't live up to your expectations.
Yeah, the Star Trek and World's End.
Yeah, World's End was a big... that let me down, and I had almost no expectations for it, so... Yeah.
I got a three pack of it for really cheap for all those movies on Blu-ray, so I need to sit down and watch it. I have not yet. I guess the only Edgar Wright movie I have not seen in theaters, though, so I'm a little disappointed I didn't get to see that one in theaters, even if it wasn't as good as people hoped or I hoped.
Yeah, I don't know. There's plenty of stuff that's coming out that's been out that in the last part of the year that's pretty good. Like, it's not a bad year for movies. Like, everyone says that every year. Like, oh, it's a bad year for movies. They say that every fucking year. But it almost never actually is. Like, if you actually, you know, take in the whole year. And there's plenty of stuff I haven't seen that I really need to see. Like, The Spectacular Now and Blue Jasmine. You know, stuff that I kept meaning to watch and just didn't get to it. And I feel really bad about it. And I'll get to that stuff before you know, the awards shows start. That's always my deadline. It's like, see this stuff by here. And you'll be okay.
What happens if you don't see it, Zach? How are you not okay?
Well, I turn back into a pumpkin.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway.
And then I turn him into a pie and serve him to people.
This went a little dark.
The needy on Christmas.
That's terrible.
What else am I going to do with a pumpkin?
Yeah, you turn him into a pumpkin pie on Christmas. That's not even the right holiday. It should have been Halloween.
I don't think the needy care. It's a pumpkin pie. Everybody loves pumpkin pie.
Needy, no. Let's move on from your controversial opinions about the poor. Chibi UFO asks, have there been any surprise hits for anime this year? Well, no one expected Attack on Titan to be as big as it was. But, I mean, Kill la Kill. Calling these things surprised, or surprise hits, that doesn't seem like...
Well, it's kind of pretty in a microcosm, it's harder to say what's a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember the days before Attack. Okay, so does anybody remember Gargantia? There was a actual, like, competition, so to speak. People were like, oh, I wonder what's going to be the biggest hit of this year, Gargantia, which is a gorgeous show, by the way. It's really pretty. And it has a terrific, fucking great first episode. And then after that, what happens? But there was actually, like, a Gargantia or Attack on Titan, what's going to be the biggest hit thing. And, like, after 2 weeks, that was forgotten, and nobody's going to remember Gargantia ever again.
Gabblematic asks, by the time you record the podcast, has the Dokes thing stopped being funny? Well, no. But it's not necessarily just intended to be funny. We're serious about that becoming the word people use to talk about that show.
It's a serious vendetta.
We're not kidding. We do want people to refer to it as Dokes. It's not really a joke. And it was funny initially for different reasons. Now it's funny because we won't stop. Mm-hmm. And we'll never stop. So it won't ever stop. Don't try to get us to stop. Don't try and tell us, oh, you shouldn't talk about it, because all that does is fuel us. We will call it Dokes forever. It will always be Dokes.
Or the Dokes, if you prefer.
Or the Dokes. Or my Dokes. That's fine, too.
If you want some smokes, turn back time for some Dokes.
Yeah. Yeah, Brady made that great image that you see on the front page for the last episode of the Mike Toole Show. Mm-hmm. So, Mad Scientist also asks, have either of you seen The Wind Rises? No. If so, how do you feel about the movie and the controversy surrounding it? I'm very curious to see it.
Yeah.
I want to see it for myself before I have an actual opinion. I've read a lot about it, and I've read plenty of opinion, and lots of different takes on the material, and now I just want to see it for myself.
That's, I gotta say that it's the most interested I've been in a Miyazaki or a Ghibli film in a while, like one of the recent ones.
No shit.
Ponyo, 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 fishy in the sea.
Who are the Disney Channel stars that they got to record the,
Somebody's little sister and somebody's little, one of the Dakota Cyruses.
Fannings, right? One of the Fannings?
No? I feel like that was for My Neighbor Totoro. It was, like, Cyrus, Minnie, and Minnie Jonas. Minnie Jonas and Minnie Cyrus or something like that.
Oh, God. Okay.
Maybe... I know. The Jonas was right. The Cyrus may not be. I don't remember.
Whatever.
That was for Ponyo?
Oh, I had it right. Okay. Yeah, for Ponyo.
Ponyo.
Who cares?
Ugh, Ponyo. All right, Land of Obscusion asks, have fans lowered the bar too low, or are they unwilling to admit that they can like titles with complete depravity, a la Aesthetica of Rogue Hero?
Oh, no.
Yeah, who'd have thought that show would come up?
I don't get, like, see, I don't defend my love of cheesecake shows. I don't get why. I mean, if something's garbage and you like it, like Vampire Knight, just say it's garbage and you like it. I don't get why it's like, well, actually, it's progressive, because you don't have to, nobody cares. Just enjoy your garbage. It's fine.
It doesn't make you a bad person for liking garbage. Like, that.
Well, everybody needs, like, a little garbage. Like,
I wish people would just have a fucking sense of humor about themselves and the things that they like.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that much to ask? Just have a sense of humor about it. Don't take yourself so goddamn seriously, and none of this will seem that important to you.
Yeah.
That's so it. That's good. That's the secret. That's the fucking secret. Stop taking yourself so fucking seriously.
But I have a sense of humor. I like memes. Yeah. I think they are funny. I have a great sense of humor. Everyone says I am so funny when I post my memes to Facebook, and I post a link to BuzzFeed. Everyone finds me hilarious. I'm so funny.
Well, that's not humor. That's not a joke.
You don't have to explain it to me. I was doing it for you.
It's just, like, it doesn't matter. Anime can define you. That's fine. It can totally be like, this is my personality. I'm an anime fan. Great. Also have a sense of humor about that.
Yeah.
Also joke about it. Also be open to the fact that people might not take that not take you that seriously if that's your attitude. And be willing to laugh at yourself. Ah, it would just make things so much better. Like, this is the solution to all of this shit.
Yeah.
Anyway. A Tasty Sub asks... Submarine Sandwich sounds pretty good right now. Tasty Sub asks...
am I really tasty or not? You decide.
If it's from Subway, probably not.
Favorite guilty pleasure of 2013? Anything from anime, cinema, Simple Lazy Day, or even Things? He's referring to the film Things.
Yes.
Which we experience.
You have to experience things. You cannot only watch it. You will experience things.
Things.
Things. Look it up. Are there multiple films?
Guilty Pleasure, I don't know. Guilty Pleasures are things that come up over long periods of time. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of those things where... one of those things where, over time... you discover this is a guilty pleasure. It's not something you can figure out, like, right away.
Yeah.
Like, you'll see something new and you'll laugh at it and you'll be like, that was terrible. I loved it. Mm-hmm. And then later you'll revisit it and then you'll revisit it again and again and again. And that's what turns it into a guilty pleasure. But that's like a maybe 5-year process.
Yeah, it's
where you discover what your guilty pleasure is. It's not right away.
Not everything can be Goof Troop.
Not everything... I wouldn't even call Goof Troop a guilty pleasure.
We said no in jokes.
Yeah.
God damn it.
That was a serious answer, though.
Yeah.
All right.
But, I mean, I think for me, movie-wise, it's probably the G.I. Joe Retaliation. I enjoyed that, and I know it's not a great film. Like, it's not a film. It's just a fun action film, and I really enjoyed that this year.
If it had only been 90 minutes, I really would have liked White House Down, but it was too long. Parts of it, I was like, yes, this is terrible. Thank you, Roland Emmerich. This is dreadful. But unfortunately, it's, like, way too long. But if it was, like, 90 minutes, White House Down would be a great guilty pleasure.
Yeah, that movie was way too long.
It was way too long.
I like
the part where they drove the Humvee around the lighthouse lawn and did donuts while people shot at them. That was pretty great. There were parts of it that were funny, but...
Man, that was a really stupid movie. Tangy Tangerine asks, after a somewhat mixed 2013, is there one genre of anime you wish would go away and one you could see more of? I'm kind of tired of this question.
Huh?
I don't want anything to go away.
I don't know. I could do without the incest.
Well, Yeah, of course.
Well, I figured it's a valid answer. Unfortunately, for the most part, like, it is going away. Like, it's not nearly as prominent as it used to be, but still.
But at the same time, okay, make your stupid incest cartoons. I just won't watch them.
Uh-huh.
Also, please keep making the things that I like.
Right.
Like, that's kind of what I'm getting at here. Like,
mm-hmm.
you can make all that shit. Fine, it's keeping your studio open. Maybe your studio also makes something that I want to see.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore. Like, I don't care. You having your horrible filth doesn't detract from me having what I want.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm over the whole, like, oh, this thing getting made means my thing isn't getting made. And, you know, like, we saw the worst possible version of that earlier this year with the free thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, that attitude is sort of reverted over to the Otaku crowd, where now they feel threatened whenever anything they don't love gets made.
Mm-hmm. It's not so much that, I mean, it's not like, oh, this gets made instead of something that I want. It's more, I don't mind a bunch of boob shows getting made, specifically. Like, I don't mind harem, I don't mind boobs, like, that's fine. It's specifically, like, Lolicon and Ciscon, because I specifically don't really like that stuff getting popular enough to get, like, licensed and stuff. It's like, that's kind of weird, where stuff gets, like, really released over here because there's a market for it. Like, it just depresses me, because I'm going to, even if I don't watch it, I can't totally ignore it, because I'm going to hear about it. That's kind of sick and depressing. Like, I'm fine with titty shows everywhere, but I don't know, the incest and the lolicon stuff, like, that's, it's like, come on, just cannot be buried, cannot not be, like, up in the forefront of our faces in a Best Buy, like, that's, let's not do that. Let's not. I don't know.
Like, I agree with you 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm saying, I don't think that stuff's going to go away so long as it keeps selling.
Right, yeah.
And so there's, it is a waste of my time to sit here and be like, oh, I wish they would stop making this. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
Me saying that isn't going to do anything, and they're going to keep making it so long as we still get Kill la Kill and you know, Flowers of Evil and the Attack on Titan and, you know, so long as we keep getting all that stuff. The Watamote, so long as we keep getting that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Mm-hmm. Make whatever the fuck you want, just so long as you keep making stuff that is not just aimed at the I want to fuck my 6-month-old baby sister crowd.
Yeah. God.
What show did I miss?
Jesus.
I think that, especially this year, it's been a year of more variety, which is great, and that's all I can personally ask for from, you know, it's just variety. Because there's always going to be sort of dreg shows out there. Like, that's, you know, you're never going to get rid of them, get rid of it all.
The chat is losing their shit.
What did we decide was the next big fetish? It was going to be adopted daughter? Adopted daughter fetish.
I don't remember if we decided that or not, but that is in a couple anime, so. You know.
It's gonna be soon. It's gonna be soon.
But it doesn't
count because it's not really his daughter.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, well, they just
where won't they go? They're already at like 6-year-old sisters.
Mm-hmm.
I choose not to believe that. Like, what show is that?
It's not really Bunny Drop. It's not.
It's not really Bunny Drop.
I own Bunny Drop because it's not that at all. Thank God. But, you know. There's also, like, Listen to Me Girls, I Am Your Father, which, it's not like he fucks them, but it's, that subtext is there, you know? Stuff like that.
Anyway. Moving on.
Yeah, the big secret is these two people and other people are my anime filter, so I don't usually traipse into these terrible things. I wait for other people to do it for me and just be horrified.
All right, AngelX03 asks, are there anime genres nowadays that you feel are still unfairly gender-biased? Examples, some popular long-running shonen shows like Hunter x Hunter and Naruto.
I don't get that question.
Is that, so they're unfairly gender-biased because they're about male characters?
I don't get it.
In a show aimed at, you know, little boys?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
No, I don't think that's an unfair gender bias. I think they're trying to sell toys.
Why are all the leads of Magical Girl shows girls?
Why can't we have the all boys Magical Girl show?
Why isn't it Cardcaptor Shaoran? Actually, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
The utopia in which every show is aimed at the exact proper audience all the time.
But Namco Hiya has a gender-neutral protagonist. Isn't that great? Don't give me fisheye. I'm just repeating what I saw on Tumblr. It's true.
Look, I want to romance Mr. Driller. I want a long, torrid affair with Mr. Driller. And apparently I can't have that, so I'm sad.
Okay. We are, we're through the Twitter questions, and now we're gonna do a little experiment. We're gonna take questions from the chat. This show is being taped live, so we're gonna go ahead and do that. You'll have to forgive the editing on this. In the chat, if you just direct your questions at me using my username in the chat, I'm sure to see it. That'll be good. Just make sure you use my name. Lane asks, what are your hopes for Evangelion 4.0 now that 3.33 has set the stage?
My hope is they add more decimal points to that, because, you know, it's got to be like 4.444.53. Then I'll be happy.
3.1492.
I just want to see where they take it. I have so little, like, expectations for that whole thing, and that's not like, oh, I don't care anymore. Hang on. This is scrolling way too fast. Hang on. I knew this would happen. I don't really have a lot of expectations for that franchise. I just want to do something crazy and new and something neat that I haven't seen before. They keep doing that. So as long as they keep doing that and it's crazy and new and different, fine. That's totally fine. Like, I'm cool with it. It's not, like, 3.33, a lot of people bitched about it. I thought it was fine. So, you know, I'm going to review it in the new year once the dub's out. So, you know, I just want it to be nutty. And I want them to not shy away from the crazy sex apocalypse stuff that they set up. I want it to be like that.
Wait, sex apocalypse makes it sound way more pleasant than it ever actually ends up being.
Is it sex apocalypse, or should it be sex apocalypse?
Well, the title sex apocalypse sounds like the title of a porno. It's never like fun sex apocalypse. It's I'm sure Shinji would prefer an actual like sex apocalypse compared to what he actually
does. I don't know about that.
Maybe, okay. Yeah, you're right. Maybe he wouldn't.
Like, when it comes to Ava, I think like anything that is completely new and different actually makes me more interested in it. Because, I don't know, I've seen Ava and all that so many times that it's hard for me to get interested in it, but those movies are not too bad. I enjoyed the first and the second one. I haven't seen the third one. And the fact that they're, at least the second one anyway, is way more, it's different, is actually interesting to me.
Okay. Let's see here. Dotto004 asks, what old movies did you discover this year that you really liked? A couple, but we'll talk about those on the holiday special, actually. Watched one of those earlier tonight. It was pretty good. Let's see here.
That's a tease.
Yeah. Let's see here. Myru asks, how much is your enjoyment of a piece of media impacted by the personal views of that media's audience? For example, Attack on Titan's Isayama's controversial views.
He has controversial views? I haven't heard about this.
I don't know exactly what you're talking about in terms of that guy's controversial views. You said impacted by the personal views of that media's audience, which is not Isayama. The audience of that show. That's a good question.
Becomes a little difficult with some stuff. Like, I still like Death Note, but God, don't talk to anybody that really likes Death Note. Or people that really like the main character, etc. Like, it just kind of depends.
Like, I want to be Misa, and there you go. Pretty much. No, I like, for me personally, that's one of the reasons I tend to wait to watch things, but that and just I work so much, but I mean, I know you guys know that I didn't watch Full Metal Alchemist until like last year, like the original first one. And the fact that people weren't saying, "Oh my God, you got to watch this! Oh my God, so great!" blah blah blah, like all the time. And I had the time to sit down and watch it without people going nuts on me about it was refreshing for me, because there was a point where just and I try not to let this happen, but when people talk too much about something, I tend not to. When it's so egregiously in your face, it's hard to ignore that. Though I tend to try to ignore most of what people say. I mean, obviously, with any kind of review or media or whatever, you have your trusted sources of I like this. What this person has to write about things, I sort of trust their opinion. But I tend to try to, especially stuff that's just way in your face, I try to sort of stay away for it until later. And that I very much try not to say I'm never going to watch this, but I want to wait to watch this thing when it dies down.
I actually have the opposite reaction. Like, I will, and I know this is actually different from many people's reactions, but people talk about all the time about, oh man, I don't really want to see this because nobody will shut the fuck up about it. And I get that if it's direct, if somebody's directly telling you, you have to see this, why haven't you seen this yet, and they're being a real bear about it, like, that's obnoxious. But if a lot of people around, not directly harassing me, but just around in general, are just sort of talking up something, I tend to go, oh, well, I have to look at this, because even if it wasn't on my radar originally, there's something about this that's captivating people. And even if I don't like the thing, it's not like I'll be disappointed and go, oh, huff, I didn't like this. I like to think about, like, okay, so what is it about this that gets people so obsessed? Like, like Sword Art Online was a really good example of that. Because when I watched Sword Art Online, I was like, hey, this is pretty neat for the first about 3 episodes or so. And then I was like, this is light novel-y. And then the second season, I was like, this is fucking gross. And I was like, what is it about this that it can't, like has people so tore up? Like, I get that it's entertaining and there's parts of it that are really well animated, but what is it that's got people so tore up about this? And the more you look into it, it's one of two things. It's either very typical harem appeal, like self-insert fantasy, only it's not as bald as a harem, and there's this higher, like, I also want to be a superhero thing to it, so it's even more appealing. Or, if it's not that directly, it's people obsessed with the world building and going, oh, well, if I was in this game, I would be this class, that, and the other, and I would blah, 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 like, and people talking about how would this even work for an MMO, people just getting wrapped up in the nerdy-ass semantics of it. And it was like, that's what this is. So this is one
The technicalities, like, how does this world work? How does this function?
And I get that. I mean, there's a part of me that likes that, too. But ooh, man.
I think for me that was it was like Angel Beats. Like, how does that world work? Like, that, I think that.
Yeah, but Angel Beats had some genuinely. I like Angel Beats a lot. It wasn't about world building. Like, there are large sections of Sword Art Online that are like, this is just us talking about how this video game works. Angel Beats doesn't really care about how the world works. It's just about the people.
So right. Well, no, that's why that show is actually way better than Sword Art Online. Yeah. But. But I felt like the world they created is why that show's interesting too. Like, it allows them to tell the stories and with the people in there.
Yeah,
It's why Sword Art Online is interesting for an episode and a half.
Yeah, and also, like, people aren't talking about it now. Like, stuff still sells for it, but people aren't.
They're making more.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, more. Like, when I say that, like, I avoided FMA because it was very much those people in my face egregiously going, you have to watch this, oh my God, you gotta watch this, you gotta watch this, you gotta watch, like, every day. And there's a breaking point where it turns from, oh, people are talking about this, maybe I should check it out, to I just wish people would stop talking to me about it. But then when that happens, though, I very much try not to, like, hate the show over it, but to go back to it later or give it a chance when it's not so in your face. I don't know. I don't know if it's weird or not, but that's sort of my take on when people get in your face about something.
What about Brotherhood? Haven't you seen Brotherhood? You should watch Brotherhood.
No, we've talked about which one I prefer, and I hands down think the first series is better.
Well, how far did you even make it in Brotherhood?
I watched all of both of them, actually. I mean, I think the this is old. We're not talking about really old anime, but I think as a clever ending, Brotherhood has a, because it's the manga ending, has a better ending. But overall, the actual, the pace, the character development, everything is way better in that first series, especially with Maze Hughes. Like, he is such a better character in that first series. How sad the brothers get over his spoilers is when he dies and all that stuff. It plays and it's more believable in that first series. It's that whole first series is much better paced. It's much better.
All right. Aquadraka asks, thoughts on the strong possibility of more Dokes movies and spinoff products?
Tons.
Merchandising doesn't bother me. There will be another film at least. I mean, that's dumb to think that there wouldn't be another film.
Kind of has to be.
I don't care. I'm happy to see the next thing. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with that moving forward. I think there's only one or two different ways they can really go with that story. But I don't really mind. The concept of purity is not an issue for me. I can watch the Madoka TV show and be just fine and enjoy that whole thing. And then I can watch that third movie and say, like, what the fuck is this? And not really feel like it ruins the TV show for me.
Mm-hmm. It's just, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's a different thing. I can enjoy these things separately and, you know, separate those two out. And you can stop at some point. You can say, like, okay, here's where I'm going to stop this. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm perfectly happy to. I like that world. I like those characters. I like the visual aspect of it, even when it's overkill. Like that movie. I wanted to talk about this more in the review, but it was so full already. You know, there's not much to. I don't know. There wasn't really any place to put it, but that movie is overkill on the visual aspect. Like, it's the whole nightmare thing. Most of it is nightmare witch stuff, and fuck, it's too much. It is actually too much. It needed to be pared down. There's some really neat things that they do visual metaphor-wise, but they kill it to death. And yet, even though it's overkill, I don't care. I'll still watch more of it. So, because, yeah, purity doesn't matter to me. I'm more than happy to just indulge more of that stuff, but it doesn't, you know, I'm not like, oh, this is really necessary, or this really adds to it. It didn't add shit. This is already fine the way it is. Just give me more candy and I'll eat it, I guess.
Well, it's like one of those things where, like, candy. For instance, does the fact that Evangelion has a strip mahjong game, does that in any way take away from the original show? No, it does not. Of course not. I mean, they do that with anything that's popular, and that doesn't destroy the original intent of the show or the you know, I mean, it doesn't.
Yeah, you know, I just, like, if Peter Jackson had decided to make the Hobbit movies psychedelic art films that had nothing to do with the book, I would have been really excited about that. Like, the original book exists. I can read that. I can enjoy that. I can appreciate that. I want to see every weird-ass take on that anyone has. I really do. Like, that's fine. That's fine. The original is not tainted by what comes after it. That's always been my attitude towards this sort of thing. I don't think remakes harm the original. I don't think that if you riff on something or make a new thing based on an older thing, somehow that destroys the older thing. That's not how I've ever seen it. It's not how art works. If that's how art actually functioned, you wouldn't even have things like satire or parody. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you gotta look at this stuff with an open mind. Anyway,
Without artistic license, we wouldn't have giant fat bat cat Smog from the animated Hobbit.
Yeah, sure.
Trippy Smog.
So, OP Gourmet Hunter asks, do you think it's reasonable to judge a person's character if they're open about their love for Lolicon?
Usually there's other evidences to see if there's, like, actually an issue, but, yeah, if they're super, like, LilyCon forever, there's a problem.
Let me clarify here. Yes, I think it's reasonable to judge that person's character in terms of how they relate to you. So, let me put it to you this way. If I'm at a convention, and I meet a person, and they introduce themselves using their online handle, and say, like, I have a daughter or a son, and they're a small child, and they're with me, and you come up and introduce yourself as, hi, I'm Swordmaster 4015, and you happen to be a guy who's been on our forums who has strongly expressed your love for LoliCon material or that sort of thing on the forums. I don't think it's unreasonable for me to smile, shake your hand, and get away from you as fast as I can. Because I know something about you that I shouldn't know. Something you should have kept to yourself. And I don't think that's unreasonable. People on the internet like to feel like that's an unreasonable response, and they will treat you like you're a monster if you judge me for this. And it's like, don't tell me that in the first place. And if you're going to meet me in person, this is the only place where it actually matters, is if you meet me in person. Why would I want to be around you with, with my little kids? You've said explicitly that you are into that kind of imagery. I don't want you to be around my children. I don't understand why that's like this horrible, evil, intolerant attitude. Someone tells you something about themselves. Yeah, you take information away from that, and then you decide whether or not you want to interact with that person in real life. I don't think that's an unreasonable attitude to have. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, in what cases do people not react to others differently when they hear information that may be relevant? Like, in what cases are you just listening to something and everything that they say bounces off your brain and does not change how you talk to them, like, or how you react around them? Like, that's not human nature. That's not how that works.
Well, I mean... the situation you described was, I have children. This person is actually attracted to children. I should probably not be around this person. I mean, obviously, you're supposed, like, yes.
It's like sort of an IE ergo thing. Like,
yeah.
Winner for most uncomfortable question?
That's a perfectly reasonable question. Yanagi808 asks, is there any reasonable chance that you could get Stephen Foster on the show? Have you even asked? I've been asking for years. The answer is no. He will not come on the show. Not a fan. Not a fan of us. Not a fan of the show.
Super nice guy, but I would... that would be the sign of the apocalypse,
yeah, he's a very
think.
Nice guy. I just, I don't blame him. He doesn't want to come on the show. All right. Anime on Kickstarter in 2014. Do you think we'll see more or less, both for original projects like Kick Heart and Little Witch Academia 2, and releasing existing stuff like Time of Eve? Yeah, I think we'll probably see more on Kickstarter.
You have enough successes, more people are going to want to try it.
Yeah. If that's all I need. If it's, they can raise, $100,000 on Kickstarter and make a show, then great, good for them. Okay. I'm going to truncate your question, An American. You're asking if I'm going to watch Fate Zero, even though Carlos Santos is reviewing it. I do intend on watching Fate Zero. Everyone's told me it's really good. That box set's already gone out the door, obviously, months ago, so I don't have it anymore, and I didn't watch it when it was in the house, but it's streaming still, so I'll check it out that way. I do intend on watching it. Megabatimus asks, most anticipated movie of next year? Well, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's going to be the movie. It's going to be the movie.
Apes Reboot 2.
Pinning all my hopes on that movie.
Apes 2.
But that's got no James Franco, right? Like, he's not in the second one?
No, he's not in the second one. Most anticipated anime right now is Space Dandy. They don't announce things more than a few months in advance. Mm-hmm. So right now we know what's coming out in winter. And that's it. But right now, obviously, it's Space Dandy.
Yeah. And I know it's come up a bunch of times in the chat. They're like, what do you think about it being on Toonami. And what other answer can you have other than, that's really cool that it's coming out early here and we're going to get to see it on TV and it's going to be a TV show. It's going to be on TV. Like, how, like, or do they expect you to say it's shitty that they got it on TV?
It sucks that it's on Toonami. It blows.
Mad Scientist asks, Hope has mentioned that dualism is a favorite theme of hers. Do I and Brady have particular themes that you really love to see in fiction as well? Brady?
Wait, what? What was the question exactly?
Themes you like to see in fiction.
Big ideas, concepts, stuff like that.
God, you put me on the spot because I haven't had time to think about this. I mean, I don't know. I think I'm attracted to, like, occult horror a lot. The thing is, a lot of that's really bad. But I like really anything that's got a good occult horror, vampire, that kind of thing. Spooky stuff. Like, not so much horror movies, like, because most horror movies these days, like Saw or whatever, aren't really horror movies. They're more, this is a movie that is trying to unsettle you. It's not an actual horror movie. And but yeah, like that kind of stuff. I like stuff with really weird like worlds or just stuff that gets away from reality, really. Obviously, stuff like Breaking Bad is, you know, I loved Breaking Bad, and that's sort of more, it's a more, I would say more grounded show than a lot of the other things I watch. But, yeah, it's mostly stuff that's, just has, a, like, we mentioned Angel Beats earlier, and I found that the world and just the ability of that world to create, interesting interactions and characters, put together a bunch of different characters, really interesting, like that kind of stuff. And beyond that, just I like seeing hero shows where the hero, there's at least one really positive hero, and that he's I like that sort of fighting for justice and that kind of thing. Like, one of the reasons I really like Tiger and Bunny, at least the first half, is Kotetsu was that character. You didn't really see that. You tend to see more characters in shows recently which are either reluctant heroes or here's the super female badass character who has zero personality, which I don't get that sort of archetype. I like, one of the reasons I liked Black Lagoon was because Revy wasn't exactly that. She was sort of the killer character, but they make sort of clear once you have her interact with, you know, Rock in that show, that that's not just the thing. She's not just the silent killer. That's the kind of thing. So yeah, like the reason I like Tiger and Bunny is because Kotetsu was the super positive hero. Or I mean, there's a lot of that in Gurren Lagann as well, where at least the first half of that is, we're the underdog, but we don't care, we're gonna win and keep winning. And I really enjoy that. I don't know if that's a trope or what do you want to call that, but I enjoy that the underdog is still positive and they still think they're going to win and they're going to try and win and do it with all their might, which is sort of why I'm looking forward to like Space Dandy. Not that nobody's like, oh, I don't want to watch Space Dandy, but you know, that's one of those things where I'm sort of hoping that sort of seeps into there, into that world, the new Watanabe show, which he's got a lot of that in his shows too. So yeah, that. Sorry for going so long.
Well, the question was for you, so.
I think at this point, what I like to see most is, in terms of psychological themes, like what I want to see a character do is, or what, well, not necessarily, it's hard to phrase this because you don't necessarily know, speaking as a critic, it's hard to say like, well, I like to see more of this, because then people say like, oh, you just want that, or they try and pigeonhole you into saying, you said you like this, so that's the only thing that you like. So, I don't really want to put myself in that position, but I will say that what I do like seeing more and more is a character who is, it's hard to phrase this. What I want are what I feel like are realistic human reactions to things. People are not black and white, they're shades of gray, and you want someone who is conflicted but overcomes and does the right thing, but they have those moments where they maybe are seriously considering not doing the right thing. That kind of thing. It's boiled down into this concept of hero versus anti-hero, and it's like, oh, he's a bad guy, but he's really the good guy. And it's like, no, that's not what I want. I want a more nuanced character study. I want...
You want the Walter White of anime?
Kind of. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I think it would be great if you got a character study like that. I think that's all anyone would really want. Is something like that.
Do you think that's happened? Like,
no,
what is an example of that anime at all?
Anime doesn't go on that long, and it's it is such a commercial product for the most part that, you know, the closest we got to anything like that was, and I'm not saying this is Breaking Bad the anime, so please don't boil it down to that, but I think Flowers of Evil got pretty close to giving us something like that, where it's you're getting a nuanced character that requires you to actually think about that character's motivations, and they change from episode to episode. So you're learning more and more about this person's personality as the show goes on. That informs their motivations, that changes the way the show plays out. That's the kind of thing that I like. I like that kind of characterization. I don't really want hero and bad guy. I want someone who struggles to do what they're doing, which is what everyone does. Everyone struggles to do what they're doing. I want to see the struggle. The moral struggle, the logic versus emotion struggle. I want to see all of that struggle. I want to see the pain and the joy and the everything behind a character. I don't just want Superman and Lex Luthor. I'm bored with that. I don't want Captain Kirk and Khan. I don't want that anymore. I want complex built characters.
Like a Colonel Mustang kind of.
Yeah,
that's the character.
That's
not a terrible example.
That's not a terrible example. I think that's a. Yeah, so somebody given some kind of a struggle. I think that lets you into that character much more, and I personally relate to that much more. In a piece of fiction, when it seems like someone's actually struggling with a choice. And they have a complicated enough character that you know well enough to understand why they're struggling with that choice. Like, but, you know, what I'm asking for is the moon at this point. Like, you're not going to get that. But that's what I want. That's what I value most. That's what I think makes the best kind of stories right now. Yeah.
If I just say something real quick, because... I realized that somebody said, oh, well, Hope mentioned that she likes dualism. I should probably specify a little more what that means, because that's not a hyper-specific thing either. That's not a... yin-yang symbology is not what I mean by that. In fact, yin-yang symbology kind of bores me. When I said dualism, and when I say dualism, it's just shorthand for an extremely broad concept, kind of like what Zach was saying, an extremely broad and kind of ephemeral and hard to nail down concept. And what I mean is two perspectives that are really divorced from one another, but are sort of equal. They're equal and opposite, but it's not a good and evil. It's not, one of the reasons I liked Trigun so much was just because a lot of that show in the second half is about the characters. There's Vash and Wolfwood and their best friends, And they seem to be best buddies for, like, because they have this commonality of things that matter to them, but their perspective on the things that matter to them and how to protect those things and how to treat people is the most divorced thing in the world. So they end up being completely at odds with another. So stuff like Foils, where it's like, it's not a good versus evil, it's two combative perspectives that can't really get along based around a single theme. Because that, to me, and the reason I like that so much is that, to me, demonstrates a depth of maturity on the part of the writer, that they can think about things from two different perspectives and make them both really believable and allow you to make your own decisions based on what they're saying. So that's what I mean by dualism in the, like, it's really broad. I don't mean fucking yin-yang. So, yeah, there you go. Enough of that. Moving on.
All right. The Galactic Heroes. Nope. Sorry. Didn't. Meant to, didn't.
How many episodes is that?
101, 102, something like that.
Wow.
Studio.
You gotta mean that one really hard to get through that.
Yeah. Angry Rabbit asks, who's your favorite villain from any type of media? Well, that's easy. Daniel Plainview.
I? Grink?
Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood is the best villain ever.
Ooh, chink!
He is the greatest.
Not Skeletor?
Well, Skeletor is a close second. Daniel Plainview, though. That guy's awesome. Well, he's not awesome. He's a terrible human being.
He's awful.
But his worldview is so complete.
He's awesome at being terrible. I mean, I think, like, my favorite, like, anime villain, I really like Schwarzwald from Big O, mostly because he sort of has that thing going where he's obviously was a good guy. He was a reporter who was sort of, taken out by the man, more or less, the government or whatever. And his motives aren't completely, his motives aren't, oh, I want to take over the world and be evil. He's like, I want to show the corruption that's in this city. And yet he's still more or less the villain of that first series of the Big O, and that's one of the reasons I really like him. Plus, also his design is really cool and unique, and I think he's pretty awesome. That's my answer for anime, anyway.
For anime bad guy, it's a different story, I guess, on the whole for like film and stuff like that. For anime bad guys, pretty much all the homunculi in the original FMA are really good bad guys for different reasons, like. You know, Greed is only in, like, two episodes, but he's immediately extremely memorable, and you get what he's all about. And he doesn't, like, spoilers, Greed dies. And when he dies, he doesn't have a big, long speech about why he did what he did. You just know. And that's great that you can do that in two episodes. You know why he decided to take himself out the way that he did, without him explaining it. And then Lust is really complex, and Wrath is really tragic. And, you know, all the best... That's one of the reasons that to me is better than Brotherhood, is just because it's like, hey, complex villains. Like, Brotherhood has a lot of good things in it. The manga has a lot of good things in it. Complex villains isn't really one of those things. They're very comic, over-the-top, I'm evil bad guys. That's not really the focus of that story. The original anime FMA was about complex bad guys. Really sad.
I think more complex characters all over the place in the original one.
Scar and just Scar's not a homunculus, but yeah, all the best anime bad guys are probably from.
Okay, we got to wrap this up here pretty soon. Enterzarais asks, would you like to see more anime and manga scholarship? Well, sure, I guess. Alternately, what would you like to see changed about anime and manga scholarship? I've brought this up before, but please stop talking about World War II. Just stop it.
Stop it.
Stop. Stop. It's not relevant anymore. Just everything that could possibly have been said about anime right now that can be linked to World War II in some fashion has been said. So stop it. Talk about something else. This stuff is all staggeringly complex, incredibly artistic.
Well, not all of it.
Not all. You know what I mean? There's so much more to talk about than how this what this says about Japan as a nation. Shut the fuck up. Talk about it. Treat it like it's a movie, not like it's this other-y thing. Like, it came from Japan, and so I have to put it in the context of the Japanese people. Like, just watch it as a fucking movie. Tell us what you think. Like, The Wind Rises, there's a movie you can talk about that stuff with, because it's literally about the guy who invented the fucking Zero. There you can talk, you can bring all your World War II scholarship into that, all you fucking want. But if you want to talk about Attack on Titan, please stop with the World War II shit. Just talk about it like it's a TV show, because that's what it is. It's a fucking TV show.
It's kind of like the thing where whenever a woman makes a film, they're like, the feminist interpretation of this film, it's like, you know, maybe it's not about feminism.
Maybe it's just a movie.
Maybe it's a movie about something else.
Yeah, maybe that it isn't about whether or not the director had a vag.
Yeah.
It's just a movie. Just talk about it like it's a piece of art. Doesn't always have to be about who made it.
Well, look, I really want to know the World War II undertones of Rio Rainbow Gate. I really do.
Well, you see, in Dance in the Vampire Bund...
one breast looks like... Fat Man. The other breast, if you look at it, in this particular scene...
So you're saying
it's unbalanced, then?
Some people, like, name... You know, like, jokingly name their breasts. I would say, or if somebody's ever named Fat Man in
love. They're unbalanced, okay?
This one's
one is
bad.
Heftier than
this
the other.
Okay. Beamer06 has been copy-pasting this question over and over and over again, asking whether or not I think there's been one studio that's been on a roll and another that's been stagnating. I don't pay that close attention to what studio is creating this or that. They all work on, like, look in the credits for any given show. Half the studios that you're familiar with did at least some work on every show you've seen. It's hard to, like, parse it down to, like, This studio's really been laying down on the job, and this other studio's really been doing great work.
I do miss Bones.
I don't even parse Hollywood studios out that way. It's not like, well, this year Paramount did a great job, but Universal sure did lay down. It's like, I don't parse it that way. I just don't look at it that way. I look at individual projects... And look at who did the heavy lifting, and it's always nice to know who actually did the heavy lifting, and who did some of the grunt work and all that stuff. But Hollywood studios do so much subcontracting. Says someone in the chat. Guess what? So do anime studios.
Yes.
A tremendous amount of all that stuff is all animated in other places. So yeah.
Well, it's like the last thing really you look at in a movie is who the production or who the studio is. I mean, that really never matters. It's who's behind it.
Yeah.
Who's like, again, like you said, the heavy lifting. I mean, if you look at any anime, the credits specifically, you'll see that, oh, this was subcontracted to this and this and this, and then there's even people who aren't even in the credits are that, oh, this is obviously animated by this animator or this person if you watch it, and it's every show like. And then a lot of these anime studios aren't, like, it's not so much even, this is their project, this is a project brought to them that they either bid on or you know, it's not like all of these shows are whoever was behind, Rio Rainbow Gate, like, I don't think that was, like, their, you know, it's one of those, a project like, oh, we can make money off this, let's do this, you know, I don't think, just because, like, and these shows change hands too all the time too. Like, Full Metal Panic went through like three different studios, I think, through all three of its seasons. Like, it's whoever owns the original thing really who decides where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, like, I do kind of pay attention to what studios are doing what and what aren't, and it's not because of content. It's not like when it comes to content, I look at individuals. When it comes to like sort of a house style, I look at some studios, not all of them. Some of them are kind of generic. Most of them are generic. A couple places seem to have a bit of a house style or house trends, and those are the ones I pay attention to or pick on or whatever. Like, you mentioned Full Metal Panic. I do own all of Full Metal Panic, but the only parts I would want to watch again are the KyoAni stuff, which is the Fumofu in the second season. The first season is Gonzo, and it's sure as Gonzo show. Like, that show doesn't kind of become neat and special until all the KyoAni stuff comes up in it. But studios that actually do seem to have a style that I wish would do better or do more of. I keep thinking back to Bones, and I know they're doing Space Dandy, which is great, but for the past couple of years, it's like, I really miss the way Bones shows look. Like, I really like the way Soul Eater looks. I really like the way Razaphon looks. That kind of thing. Like, they do have a bit of a look, and I miss that, and, yeah. I mean, they're doing Space Dandy, but okay.
I mean, I think, though, a lot of that has to do with who's behind it, exactly, more so than what studio is animating it.
Yeah, it depends, but I don't know. I think Bones has a look. Shaft has a look. Gainax definitely has a look. Like, even in stuff where the art style is completely different, the way it's animated, if it's a Gainax thing, it's like, oh, okay, that's Gainax. That's not, like, that was subcontracted. It's et cetera. Like, there's stuff that's like, oh, this looks kind of like...
I mean, I get what your point is. I mean, there are a few studios where, oh, I know that they did this, or these are, like, oh, that's definitely that studio's style. But, like, I think for the vast majority of things, though... Like, that's not the case. Like, I think a lot of it is down to what is it based on, who did the designs, and who's doing the direction, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the most part, it's that. There's just a couple special cases where, like, KyoAni's definitely an example. Like, there's stuff that I'll watch and be moderately entertained by from KyoAni that if it was in somebody else's hands, the material would be so negligible that you wouldn't even sit through, like, 15 minutes of it. But yeah. Eh.
Okay. Well, that's about 2 hours, so we should probably go ahead and wrap it up here. Brady, thanks for coming by and chatting with us.
Thanks very much for having me. It's been like a lot of fun.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to everyone for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating or review. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you all next week.